You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yo, yo. Welcome to another post-game edition of the Forum Club. I'm your host, Jovan Buha, Lakers beat writer for The Athletic. And the Lakers fell 128-111 to the New Orleans Pelicans on Tuesday night, dropping to 0-3 without LeBron James and Anthony Davis this season. And this is kind of what I've come to expect from this team right now during this stretch. I'm interested to see when Marc Gasol returns and how he impacts things. I think just having another big body, a good defender, a rim deterrent, someone who is a active communicator defensively, that will help. You know, this team has been trotting out lineups where the tallest guy is 6'7 or 6'8, and that's just not going to get it done, particularly against the last couple teams they played, right? You had Phoenix with DeAndre Ayton, who's a 7-footer. Then you had New Orleans, where you have Steven Adams, 6'11", 7-footer, who's very tough and physical and strong and just uses brute force. And then you have Zion, who's only 6'7", 6'8", but is one of the biggest and strongest and heaviest players in the league and is just a human bulldozer in transition and in half-court situations. So I think even though maybe technically size-wise or height-wise, the Lakers weren't completely overmatched in this game. They were overmatched in terms of a physicality and strength and just physical force. We have these three games that they've had, Sacramento, Phoenix, and New Orleans. I think it's clear that the biggest struggle for this team, to little surprise, is the offensive end. I think the defense was not great in this game. New Orleans is a solid offensive team, a team that is young and athletic and can get out in transition. And the Lakers saw that tonight. They can get to the rim. They attempted 26 free throws. Lakers attempted 30. So, they weren't at a disadvantage there, but 26 free throws is still, a lot. And you had Zion taking 10 of those. Jackson Hayes was a bit of a force off the bench with 15 points and 7 free throw attempts. So I think for the Lakers, this is a tough stretch to be missing LeBron and AD. I said that last week, right? But with the upcoming schedule, it's doing them no favors. They got Philly on Thursday, right? And, then they got Cleveland on Friday, and then that is a winnable game. But this is going to, I think, be ugly until Marc Gasol and most likely Anthony Davis get back. And we still don't know, Anthony Davis's reevaluation is supposed to be Friday. So we'll have an idea, around sometime Friday of what the latest is with his status. But, I would not be surprised if it's another week or two, or maybe even longer. And if he misses at least two more weeks, and we know LeBron is going to be out a few weeks after Shams Charania of The Athletic reported that he's expected to miss several weeks at a minimum. If we're looking at 2 to 4 weeks with no LeBron and AD, I think the losses are going to pile up. And again, I think Mark can help, but Mark isn't going to solve all this. And I think it just comes down to, looking at this roster, you add LeBron and AD to it and it looks really, really good. And there's a lot of depth and versatility. And having a guy like Dennis or Trez or Kuz or even Talen as the third option on a given night, like that's fine when you have LeBron and AD, right? And I just named four guys. Like one of those four will be the sixth option on a given night. And that sixth option is better than a lot of other teams' sixth option. But when you take away LeBron and AD and now Dennis is the first option or Kuz is the first option, or Trez is the first option, you are going to see this level of offense. And the offense wasn't even that much of a problem in this game. I mean, they still put up 111 points. Really, the offense was, you know, the worst offensive performance was the Phoenix game because they also hung up, you know, whatever, 120 something against Sacramento, though they are the worst defense in the NBA. I still think that second quarter stretch where, you know, they only scored 17 points in the second quarter. And that was really the difference in the game when New Orleans kind of blew things open and then really put it away in the third quarter. I think right now the Lakers are in a really tough spot because they just don't have a high level shot creator right now. Dennis can attack in the pick and roll, but his pick and roll game is relatively, you know, it's relatively straightforward, right? Like you kind of know he's either getting to the rim or he's pulling up from mid range. We'll occasionally take that kind of pull up three if you're going to play off of him. But you kind of know what Dennis is doing. And it's one thing, again, if LeBron and AD are on the floor and he's the third guy and he's now attacking you from the weak side or second side action, and you don't really have, you know, time to, your defense is shifting over and rotating after doubling AD in the post or doubling LeBron in a pick and roll, and now he swings it and now Dennis can attack you. Like that is how, you know, Dennis is very effective in those situations. But having him just be the, okay, every possession down, you're going to run a pick and roll, or every other possession, you're going to run a pick and roll, or ISO or whatever, like that's, you know, it's just, that's a lot, like that's recipe for a lottery team. That's a lottery team offense. And you know, the Lakers are kind of in that mold right now, right? And you got, I mean, you're seeing inefficient nights from these guys where, you know, Dennis, 2-for-10, Kuz, 6-for-14, Keefe, 6-for-14, even Trez, you know, at 5-for-10, like, is it a little bit below his average? So, you know, Wes had a nice game with 4 threes, and I think it seems like recently he's kind of broken out of his season-long shooting slump and some of the inconsistencies, but offense really is the problem. And then having a guy like Talen only play 19 minutes, I think mainly for defense because he was in during some of those rough stretches defensively, but him only having 5 points on 2-of-5 shooting, I think that, you know, it's just the Lakers aren't getting, you know, they did have 6 guys in double figures, but no player had more than 18. And I just think, you know, with the way the game is played right now, it's hard to win, you know, with just not having that elite offensive option, right? And it's through no fault of their own. You know, it's the circumstances. LeBron and AD are out, and you take the top 2 players off most teams, they're really going to struggle. But I think this team in particular is a bunch of role players that are supposed to fit around LeBron and AD. And Kyle Kuzma basically said that post game, where he said, you know, we have to figure out a new identity without LeBron and AD. Like, this team was designed around LeBron and AD. We play a certain style around LeBron and AD, and now we got to mix it up. We got to play faster. We got to get out in transition. We got to take more threes. And I think kind of the point that Kuz was getting at is, like, they do have to add in a level of variance. And you know, they have to take care of the ball, which they've done. 11 turnovers against Phoenix, 13 turnovers against the Pelicans. Like, that is solid, and that is going to keep them in games that you know, maybe they otherwise wouldn't be in. And they took a lot of threes tonight. You got to give them credit. 18 for 37, shot 48%. Got to the free throw line. Only made 21 of 30 attempts, you know, 70%, but still 30 attempts is really good. It really was the other, you know, like everything inside the 3-point arc that wasn't a free throw was the issue, because they shot, I'm looking at it now, you know, basically 18 of 48 on 2-pointers, which I'm going to do some quick math on my computer. 18 of 48 is 37.5%. So shooting 37.5% on 2-pointers, you're not going to win many games that way, especially when you have a guy like Brandon Ingram going off for 36, Zion going off for 27. It's interesting. I think the Lakers are in a really tough spot. Like, I do think that there are winnable games. I think Cleveland's winnable. I think Orlando's winnable. I think Sacramento's winnable. You know, those are the games that they have to win, right? Like, those are the, they have to show up, give 100% effort, be locked in for 48 minutes, and you know, win at least 2 of those 3, right? Like, you know, with just the upcoming schedule, they can't afford to lose 2 of those 3, they have to win at least two of them, if not all three, to maintain ground in the West, because they've now dropped. It's crazy. Like a couple days ago, they were the two seed, and we were talking about them. They were tied with Phoenix, and then I think had a half game lead on them for a day or two, and we're back in the two seed, and we're only a game and a half back from the Utah Jazz. Now they're four games back from the Jazz, and they've actually dropped to the four seed, tied with the Clippers at 28-16, and the Clippers have the tiebreaker because they won on opening night. So, and now looking at it, like Denver at number five, only a game and a half back. Portland at number six, 2.5 games back. San Antonio at number seven, 4 games back. So there's a little bit of a cushion there. It does look like if the Lakers skid, they'll probably slide to six. And that, I'm going to guess, is probably their floor. But you never know. They could lose another 3 or 4 games in a row, and at which point that is putting them in that 7-8 range, depending on how teams like the Spurs and Mavericks and Warriors do. So they're not out of the woods yet, and I think they got to get Marc Gasol back. It would be great if he could play in that Philly matchup on Thursday, but all indications are he's probably not going to play. You know, there's no Embiid, but I still think he's going to help against Tobias Harris, Ben Simmons, Dwight Howard. So I don't know. I know I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but I'm just giving you my stream of thoughts on what's going on.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Big picture, as I wrote earlier in the week, like all that matters is if LeBron and AD are healthy. I think seeding, the Lakers can kind of kiss that goodbye. That they're probably going to be a 4-6 seed based on just the circumstances of the season. And that's fine, because I still think as long as you have LeBron and AD healthy, you have the two best players in most series, if not every series, potentially, depending on the level AD gets to once he returns. So I still like, you know, I'm still very bullish on the Lakers long term, but in the short term, they are going to take some lumps. They are going to have some ugly losses. They are going to have some blowout losses. And I think it's going to be more common than not, just with the offensive talent that they have available to them right now and the lack of size, right? Like, this is where not having the Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee type does hurt you, right? And I've been kind of vocal against that, saying that they don't necessarily need that, that they're fine with Mark and Trez. But this is actually, I think, an example of when it would have been nice to have that type of player, because you could have been plugging Dwight in, you know, 22 to 25 minutes a night, as long as he doesn't foul out, and kind of, you know, stopping the bleeding that way. And then, you know, depending on, I guess, who's on the roster, maybe that's when you go to Trez. You know, the other half of the game, or if maybe Dwight was there instead of Trez, then you know, you're kind of going smaller with the second unit. But I do think that they are seeing the you know, downsizing has kind of cost them in this stretch. I think just so far as, like, you know, their three biggest players are out. Mark, AD, and LeBron are their three biggest rotation players. LeBron is bigger than Keith and Trez. Like, look at them side by side. LeBron's bigger. And, you know, that's their starting front court. Their three best defensive players in the front court. And that's a lot to be losing. And then, of course, I mean, of course, LeBron and AD, you know, two superstars, two of the top 10, if not top 5 players in the league. Like, that alone, of course, is a lot. But, you know, I think even Mark, with his size, with his shooting, with his passing, his screening, like, they miss all that. So I think the Lakers are in a tough spot for the time being, but I'm interested to see when Mark returns, how that looks, when AD returns, what is the status of his timeline. And then that's, you know, to say nothing about the trade deadline, which is 36 hours away from now or so, depending on when you're listening to this. So I'm not going to touch on too much trade stuff, because we're going to touch on that in the weekly episode with Bill and Slater. So I'm going to kind of keep it more to game specific, non trade specific. But let's get into the open forum podcast part of the show, where I answer your questions. Let's go through some questions here. A lot of trade things. I'll just kind of blanket statement this. I think that the Lakers are most likely not going to make a move. I do think that if they make a move, it's probably going to have to include Trez or KCP. I really just don't see, from conversations I've had, like Wes Matthews and Markieff Morris do not have trade value, right? And their second round picks don't have much trade value either. The two assets that they have that have the most trade value are Talen Horton-Tucker and their 2027 first round pick, which is the only pick that they can trade. I don't think the Lakers want to give up either of those two assets. I think that kind of tier two asset level is Alex Caruso, probably Trez and KCP, but Alex isn't making much money, so he's more of like a throw-in, but I think obviously they're going to do everything they can to not throw him in. So I really think if we're ranking the Lakers assets in tiers, tier one's obviously LeBron and AD, but they're not trading those guys. So like just that, it's not even a factor. But tier one of realistic trade assets, it's THT and the 2027 first round pick. I think tier two is Caruso, Trez, and KCP. High level role players in their mid to late 20s. That I think can plug and play in a lot of situations, right? Like Trez is better than a lot of backup bigs. And if you put him on your team, he's probably going to become your backup center. KCP can start or come off the bench. Alex can start or come off the bench. Like, those three guys have value across the league. So I do think that if the Lakers end up making a move, it almost will have to include Trez or KCP. There is, of course, the clutch connection. With both of those guys being clutch guys, and the obvious LeBron and AD tie-in and stuff. So I'm interested how the Lakers navigate that. Do they trade a clutch client? They have yet to do that. For people making it, there's a lot of clutch. There's a lot of just kind of attention on clutch because it's LeBron and Rich Paul, and totally understand that. But, these dynamics, these dynamics are across the league where, there are plenty of teams that have multiple players with the same agency or the same agent, and there are favors done and there are dynamics that teams will not disrupt, especially when especially if it's a star player's agent, right? So I think that while people tend to fixate on clutch and they are the most well-known, and of course, with the Lakers, they have five clients. Like, these dynamics aren't necessarily unique to just the Lakers. I think if you actually dig in across the league and look at each team's roster and who the agents are, this is something that you'll see in certain situations where if there is whoever the star player's agent is, they're most likely not going to trade another player on the roster if they share the same agent. So that's just kind of, team building behind the curtain 101. So I'm interested in the KCP Trez thing. And of course, you've got to think that those guys would probably have to sign off on it to some extent if they're going to get moved. And, that's something to consider, but I am just intrigued by what the Lakers do. If you asked me, metaphorical gun to my head, I would say they don't do anything and just wait out the buyout market, most likely sign Andre Drummond or, LaMarcus Aldridge, whoever the top buyout guy is, that guy ends up on the Lakers. But I do think, depending on who is available, and Frank Vogel said it before the Phoenix game, the LeBron injury is going to potentially impact how they view the trade deadline, because he's, again, going to be out 3-4 weeks at a minimum. And there's just such a massive, gigantic void on the perimeter. I think that has become a need for the Lakers that it wasn't necessarily before. I think their two needs before were another center and another 3-and-D wing, preferably someone who had some size and was also a plus shooter, above league average shooter, someone who's shooting better than KCP and Wes and Kuz and Alex. That's maybe more of a pie in the sky type of need, because I think just finding another 3-and-D wing is really tough. Those guys don't become available often. If you look at the buyout guys, it's almost all bigs and maybe a point guard or two here or there. But for the most part, it's all bigs that aren't playing in their current situation or don't serve a function for their team moving forward. So I think that need is going to be tough to find. But now I think the Lakers probably need another perimeter shot creator, scorer, playmaker, right? Like, they need one of those guys temporarily, at least, to kind of stop the bleeding, because this is, I think, going to get worse before it gets better in terms of some of the issues they're facing. Even if they bring in a guy like Andre Drummond, we've seen what he's done in Detroit and Cleveland with lottery level talent around him, right? Like, are Dennis and Trez and Kuz that much better than some of these secondary guys Andre Drummond has had around him? I personally don't think so. He's kind of been the centerpiece of those types of teams. So that is a dynamic that have to be figured out by the Lakers over the next, you know, again, 36 hours or so, and then subsequently on the buyout market. A lot of trade questions. I'm going to stay away from those. I'll answer this one quickly. Aniket Mohan, at Aniket Mohan 24. Should the Lakers be hesitant on extending Dennis till after the playoffs? I think it depends on the price. I think if you could get Dennis in the 15 to 17 million range annually, which I don't think he will agree to, you sign that and give him 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, however many years he wants. Anything more than 17 million, I think that's like a solid cutoff for me. I wait it out, and I want to see, how does he perform the rest of the season? How does he perform the rest, into the postseason? How is he as the third or fourth guy offensively behind LeBron and AD? I want to see that. So personally, like, I don't see the Lakers giving him the 4-year, $86 million extension before the postseason. I'd be pretty surprised by that. So I think if there is a extension with Dennis, it's either going to be him taking a discount or him earning every dollar that he's going to be asking for, I think, later on. So that's my quick take on Dennis. And then last one here, I think this one's interesting. This one is from Victor Luang Long. I apologize, I butchered your name, but I do my best. 4-3 since the break. What's our record over the next 11 games, including the seven game road trip? 4-7, too optimistic. Wins against the Cavs, Magic, Kings, and Hornets. So I'm going to pull up the Lakers schedule right now, and let's go game by game. And I'll probably be wrong on all of these, so don't hold me to this. But okay, so Philly on Thursday, I'm going to say it's a loss. It's just another good team that they're playing. Philly's been rolling. They're 4-1 without Joel Embiid over the last five games. Ben Simmons is going to be the best player on the floor, and Tobias Harris is going to be the second best player on the floor. So I think Philly is going to come in and win that game. But of course, watch the Lakers win that game. It is the trade deadline day, so it could be a weird game, depending on what happens with both teams. Cleveland, it's a back-to-back, so it does make it a little bit tougher. But I'll say the Lakers beat the Cavs, and I will say they beat the Magic. So I will actually say they go 2-1 over the next three games. Then they go, then they play Milwaukee on Wednesday. They're going to lose that game. So 2-2 over the next 11, or 2-2 to start at Sacramento. I say they win that one. Okay, 3-2 at Clippers, lose at Toronto. Depends if Toronto blows it up or not. If they don't, I'll say they lose. So that is, 3-4 at Miami, lose at Brooklyn, lose. That's 3-6 at New York. Oof. I'll say win. I don't feel great about that. I'll say they win that one and then lose at Charlotte. So I'm giving them 4-7. I don't feel great about that, to be honest. I could see probably anything between 2-9 and 5-6. I don't see them going above 500 in the stretch. Again, Philly, Milwaukee, the Clippers, the Heat, the Nets. That's five to me guaranteed losses. So at best they're going 6-5, but I think they're going to lose some of these games. So yeah, I mean, I look at it as a 2-9 to 5-6 range over the next 11 games. The one thing that would change that would be Anthony Davis coming back at some point on the road trip and injecting some life and two-way play and dominance and kind of functioning as Anthony Davis in New Orleans, right? With that, you know, not a great supporting cast around him, but kind of being the center of both the offense and the defense. I think that's the one thing that would change my projection, but I'm projecting that AD and LeBron are missing the next 11 games. They're missing through that seven-game road trip. And I think, again, 2-9 to 5-6, somewhere in that range is my prediction. But yeah, I don't mean to be so doom and gloom. Again, macro, big picture, I think the Lakers are fine as long as LeBron and AD are healthy. And I think they're going to make either a move at the trade deadline, a smaller move, or they're going to get the best buyout guy or two and kind of bolster the back end and middle of the roster. So long term, I'm still bullish on the Lakers. Short term, I think it's going to be really ugly and they're going to lose a bunch of games over the next 10-11 or so. But yeah, I mean, it is what it is at this point. They can't control that. And all they can do is focus on getting AD and LeBron healthy and recovered and rested and then back. But thank you guys for listening so much. I really appreciate it. As always, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok at Jovan Buha, JovanBuha. If you have not subscribed to this podcast, you can do so on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, The Athletic, wherever you're listening to it right now. And if you have not subscribed to The Athletic, we currently have a $1 a month deal for 6 months. If you subscribe right now, the deal is ongoing through the rest of the month. So if you have not subscribed and have an interest in doing so, you basically pay $6 for the next 6 months to check us out and not just our Lakers content, but our great, you know, sport, not even just sports content. We now have culture content as well. So definitely check that out. And if you do so, please subscribe off of one of my stories. That gives me a sub credit, which helps me out. So I would really appreciate that. But again, thank you guys for listening. And I'll talk to you actually in about 24 hours with Bill and Slater.